It's certainly a blessing this evening to gather together with the saints again, to have your presence this evening, to encourage your brethren and to worship God. This is a real privilege we should never take for granted. We know that there are people in this world and some in the United States who would relish the opportunity to meet with saints like this on a Sunday evening. We should ever count our blessings and the opportunity that we have. We're going to spend a few minutes in studying God's Word on a topic some of you have studied before, some of you may not have studied, and yet it's a very needed topic to understand, and I'll explain as we get into the lesson. We're going to talk about supporting disabled or retired preachers tonight. Now, we know from 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 14 that the Lord directed that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living from the gospel. The church here has been very, very good about wanting to see that men that are preaching the gospel are provided a sufficient living to sustain themselves and their families. But the question arises, what about when a man gets to the age that he can't perform the duties that he used to perform? Maybe he can't preach all the time. Maybe he can just preach once in a while. Maybe he's not able to teach the number of classes that he used to teach. Or what if a man has health issues that prohibits him from doing the work that he's done for 30 or 40 years? Should he continue to be supported? Now, let me hasten to add something right here at this point in our lesson. So far as I know, I'm not disabled. I may forget occasionally, and people don't always speak up. Some think I'm hard of hearing, but be that as it may, I'm not disabled yet. And unless there's a new announcement coming forward, I don't plan on retiring anytime soon. So this is not a sermon that I'm preaching because of my intent or something the elders have told me. But it is an issue that we have faced in the past right here in Humble and may well be on the horizon in the near future with some men that we support. In the past, the church here supported James Wilson after he could no longer preach. Supported him until he died, even though he did not preach or teach a class. We have supported other men who were disabled by their health for a number of months after they were no longer able to preach. And so the question is this God's plan? While we may want to help those men, we have got to be assured that it's what God wants done with the contributions that people are making in His name, and thus our study. So let's open our Bibles together and study this together and see what God's plan is. So here while we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7, and Paul is discussing his right to be supported in this particular text. He uses three illustrations that he takes from human judgment. Note in verse 7. He said, who at any time serves as a soldier at his own expense? There's the first one. Number two, who plants a vineyard and does not eat the fruit of it? Number three, or who tends a flock and does not use the milk of the flock? So we have here soldiers, a vineyard keeper, and a shepherd. Now note the next line. He said, I am not speaking these things according to human judgment, am I? Or does not the law also say these things? These are matters of human judgment. His question is that the only support for these things is human judgment? Then he's going to talk about the law. But let's stop just a moment. He does appeal to these three things, and he is appealing to human judgment. I want to focus on one of these, and that's the matter of soldiers for just a moment. So let's take a soldier. Now, say a soldier enlists, say when he's 20, and let's say that he is in the military until he's 50. Now, he retires. He no longer serves in the military. Should he have any kind of support for those years of service that he rendered to our country? What is the practice in our country? And so, from the standpoint of human judgment, we say he has earned, through his years of service, a continuing maintenance or support, not because he's still serving in the military, but on the basis of those years of service. What if he is disabled? Say he's in battle and he is wounded and he's no longer able to serve. Is there any kind of support that our country, you and me who supply those funds, deem that that soldier is worthy of? Now, this is not my analogy simply to appeal to a soldier, and I don't want to overpress the analogy. But at the same time, I recognize Paul is appealing to the Corinthians about what they knew about soldiers in their day and how they were supported. And so now I have here on the chart Romans chapter 4, verse 4. It has nothing to do with soldiers. The only reason I put it on there is because of those two words that I have on the chart. The idea of favor, or the word grace if you prefer it, or what is due. The distinction is made to the one who works. His wage is not credited as a favor, but is what is due. So you work. So Neil works. He gets his paycheck. Is it a matter of the grace of the employer? I just like Neil. I'm going to give him some money. Not hardly. It's his wage. He earned it for the work that he did. And so when you look at a soldier and what he gets, is it a matter of grace or is it a matter of wage? He earned it. It's obviously the matter of he earned it. What about the retirement support that he may get or the disabled support that he may get? Is that simply a matter of grace? Or is that a matter of giving the man remuneration for the services that he provides? Now, as you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul also now appeals to the law. And you see that here. He said, does not the law say also the same things? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the ox when he is threshing. And then Paul makes this comment. Now, remember that while this first statement is found in the Old Testament, now the same Holy Spirit is guiding Paul as he writes this statement. God is not concerned about oxen, is he? Well, God may be concerned about oxen, but that's not the point. The point is that there was another lesson the people were to learn by this law, that you shall not muzzle the ox while he's threshing. So, while the ox would be working in the field, you were not to put a muzzle on him. He was allowed to eat those things that he was threshing to provide him with strength and nourishment for the work that he was doing. Here's a question. What about on the Sabbath day when they could not thresh their fields? The ox is not working. Do you feed him? Does he have a right to have his needs met on the Sabbath day? What about when this ox gets older and he's not able to thresh like he once did? You could kill him. He's just an animal. But would it also be in the realm of human judgment to recognize this ox's service and to sustain him? Not because he's old or not just because you like him, but because of the years of his service. Be that as it may, he appeals to the ox. Now, in 1 Timothy 5, again, this is not focusing on oxen. This is talking about support for men who are worthy, particularly in this text, elders who are working. But he uses this ox quote about the ox not being muzzled while he's threshing in 1 Timothy 5:18, and then he attaches this statement, the laborer is worthy of his wages. He puts it in the realm of something someone has earned. And so again, we see he used that illustration. And there's some degree of judgment here as to how that pertains to an ox, for example, when he gets old. But this is the illustration from the law that Paul appealed to. Now, he also appealed to the priest. So let's look at the priest for just a moment. Now, back in Numbers chapter 18, we're not going to read this whole section about the support of the priest. It is a very interesting section. If you're not familiar with it, it would be a good reading. Just do it when you have some time to think about the various things that are stated there. You'll see in Numbers chapter 18, verse 8, the Lord spoke to Aaron, "Now behold, I myself have given you charge of my offerings." Now Aaron was the high priest, you recall. Now in the Levitical tribe, there were Levites, and all priests were Levites, but not all Levites were priests. You had to be of Aaron's lineage. And so he's speaking to Aaron, and this would be applicable to Aaron and his sons who would serve as priests offering the sacrifices. So he says, he spoke to Aaron, "Now behold, I myself have given you charge of my offerings, even of all the holy gifts of the sons of Israel." Now here's a statement we're going to have occasion to maybe look at even later in our lesson. Note he said, "I have given them to you." So the people are offering them to God. But then you see the statement, "I have given them to you as a portion and to your sons." So not only Aaron the priest, but his sons as a perpetual allotment. Now for sake of time, as I said, we're not going to read all of these verses, but we have them listed here on the chart. They would receive a portion of the grain, the sin, and the guilt offerings. A very healthy portion of those offerings would be theirs. The peace offerings, the breast and thigh, very good portions of the meat would be for the support of the priest. And then the hides of the sacrificial animals would be for the priest. When you think about the fact that you had a nation at this time that numbered over 500,000 soldiers, and people would be offering offerings of thanksgiving and praise, offerings of sin, and you think of all these offerings that would be offered to support the priest in the Levitical tribe. The Levitical tribe numbered only in the 20,000s, but the priests were actually a smaller number of that. And all of that was to support these men. And you think of all those hides from all those animals that were killed, what was done with them? That was given to the priest as their allotment. And so they had the hides of the sacrificed animals, Leviticus chapter 7 and verse 8. And then you'll see on the chart the first fruits of the field. So that have a harvest, you bring the very best of that harvest. That would be offered to the Lord. The Lord said, "I'm going to give that to you." The devoted thing, somebody says, "I just want to devote something to God. I want to give this to His service." That would go to the priest. The firstborn son, or the firstborn cattle. The firstborn son would be redeemed with a price. But the firstborn would also go to the support of the priest. And then they would get tithes from the Levite. Remember we said there were Levites, the tribe. And then there was a portion of that tribe, the priest. The Levites would tithe to the priest. So all of these things, and you can go back and read in this section if you wish, and see all these things that are listed right here in Numbers chapter 18, verse 8 following. Now, so far as I know, and if any of you know something I'm missing, you be sure to share that with me when I'm finished, or later in the week, if you find something, you let me know. I don't know of any passage that indicates there was an age restriction on the priest. We'll see in a moment there was an age restriction on the service of the Levites. But so far as I know, not on the work of the priest. He could serve as long as he was capable, evidently until he died. And he would receive this kind of support from his work. Who set that up? That was God's plan, that the priest be supported in this fashion. And it would be a very liberal support for these men who served in that capacity. He did not want these men having to worry about flocks and fields and the other things that the other men did to support their families. He wanted these men to be devoted to the work of being a priest, and they were also teachers in the congregation as well. And he wanted those men to be relieved of those other responsibilities so they could focus on their work. But now, there's also the Levites. So here, when you read 1 Corinthians 9, going back to our text here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 10, let's go to verse 11. If we sowed spiritual things to you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others share this right over you, do we not more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but endure all things so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. The Corinthian situation was a unique situation. Paul is arguing his right of support, but he also had the right to refuse it from that church. He did receive support from the Philippian church, but he refused it from the Corinthian church because of some special circumstances that were there. Nevertheless, he had the right to be supported, and that's what he's arguing. And now he says, verse 13, do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple, and those who attend regularly to the altar have their share from the altar? That's the priest that we just read about. That's the support that God set up. Now note verse 14, so also the Lord directed those who proclaimed the gospel to get their living from the gospel. So you had the priesthood, you had the sons of Aaron with those provisions that we read about, but there was also the Levites who assisted the priest in their work, had a number of duties. You can read about that in Moses' books. But now back here in Numbers 18, let's go back to Numbers 18 once again and look at this these provisions for these priests. In Numbers chapter 18, and verse 21, to the sons of Levi, so that's the Levites, behold, I've given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance. In return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. The sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, or they will bear sin and die. Only the Levites shall perform the service of the tent of meeting. All right, so verse 24. Let me get the end of verse 23. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations and among the sons of Israel. They shall have no inheritance. They didn't get the inheritance of a portion of land like the others. They were allotted some cities, but they didn't get the land inheritance like the other tribes. And so for the verse 24, the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites. Notice again the terminology. When the people tithe, they tithe to the Lord. They gave it to the Lord. We use the term the Lord's money. That is, we gave it to the Lord for His work. That's what the tithe was. But God in turn says, I have given it to the Levites for an inheritance. And so he said, they'll not have an inheritance. So you see that the tithe was for the Levites, for their support, instead of having a land inheritance that they would take care of. Now, back in Numbers 8 and 23 and 24, when he talked about the Levites, he said, verse 24, this is what applies to the Levite from 25 years old and upward. They would serve 25, and there's another verse about 30. There's 20, 25, and 30, but various times in their history. But here's 25 and upward. They shall enter to perform the service in the work of the tent of meeting. But at the age of 50 years, they shall retire from service in the work and not work anymore. So they would serve to the age of 50 in that work, and then they were through. Besides the ordinary tithes, you have a crop, you're to tithe that crop. Your herd bears animal, you're to tithe of the increase of your herd, etc. Besides that tithe that was done once a year, also there were the festivals. Look on Deuteronomy chapter 12, and they would have these particular feasts. in honor of God. In Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 17, you're not allowed to eat within your gates the tithe of your grain or your new wine or oil or the firstborn of your herd or flock or any of your votive offerings with your vow, your freewill offerings or the contribution of your hand. And then verse 19, be careful that you, so when they came, verse 18, you shall eat before the Lord your God. And he said, be careful that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live in the land. So when they would come to the place God chose and celebrate before God for his wonderful blessings, both here and in chapter 14 and 27, they were told not to forget the Levite. There's some question about how many tithes they had. We know about the annual tithe, the increase of their herd and flock. Some think that there were at least two tithes, and I'm convinced of that, but possibly even three. But be that as it may, what we're looking at is not the subject of tithing so much as the fact of what God's plan was. And God's plan was that those tithes were to support the Levites. Now, here's a question. Here's a Levite who's worked for 25, 30 years, whatever the case may be, in service. He's 50. He's got to retire. Is he still to be supported with the tithes? If he's disabled, let's say at 40, he's disabled, and he can't serve anymore, is he still to be served and supported with the tithes? The question is, what would God want the nation to do? He said, I'm not going to give you any land. You do this work, and this is going to be your provision. Now, I don't know of any passage that indicates that the tithes the Levites were to receive would end when they were 50 or if they were disabled. Again, if you're aware of a passage, you let me know. Not that it proves a whole lot, but I wanted to do some further investigation when I studied this topic, and so I went and wrote some Jewish rabbis, thinking maybe they knew something about the Jewish law, and they have actually confirmed what we're stating to you tonight. That's not what we're appealing to for proof, however. It was just for me to try to see if there was something that was out there that I was missing. So far as I know, there is not. And so this was God's plan according to 1 Corinthians 9, and he said, so the Lord directed. This is God's plan for the support of those men that dedicate themselves to service. Now, we have a case over here in Philippians. Look over at Philippians in chapter 4. The reason this particular case is of interest is because this preacher was in prison. He's thus very limited as to what he can do. He's doing what he can. He's writing letters. We have the four prison epistles. Obviously, he's not able to travel. Obviously, he's limited as to who he can have to come and visit with him to study. I don't know that he can do any preaching as we think about preaching. And yet, we find in this text that we have in Philippians chapter 4, verse 10 through 18, that the Philippian church was sending him support while he is there in prison for the gospel of Christ. In verse 10, he said, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. We remember from 2 Corinthians that the Macedonian Christians were spoken of as people sometimes facing poverty. And so it's not that these Philippians didn't want to help Paul as they did in the very beginning of the gospel, but evidently they were strapped for funds or ability. But now they're able again, and they express their concern. And that's really what Paul is rejoicing about. He's glad to have the funds, but what he's really happy about is that it expresses the attitude behind it, that they're concerned about him and about his work. And so when you get down to verse 15, you yourselves know, Philippians, that at the first preaching of the gospel, after I left Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving but you alone. For even in Thessalonica, you sent a gift more than once for my needs. Now, that was early on. That's not now. Now he's in prison. Back then he was actively out preaching, but now he's not. He's in prison. And so he says, verse 17, not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek for the profit which increases to your account. Their bank account was going down, but their spiritual account was going up. And so it's to your account, he said. And he said, I have received everything in full. Now note, and have an abundance. Here's a fella. So this would be 61 to 63 A.D. approximately. If Paul obeyed the gospel, say 33, we'll just take a date. Somewhere in that area, 33 to 36 A.D. And if at that time he was already over 30, which is likely he was, because he may have in fact served on the Sanhedrin and you had to be 30 to do that. But be that as it may, let's say 33, and let's say he's 30, so 63, that makes him around 60. So he's getting up in years. In addition to that, he's in prison. And now he says, I've got what you sent, and I have an abundance. Shouldn't the church say, look, he's older. He's not able to do what he once did because he's in prison. There's no indication his mind was failing in any way. But certainly he's limited by things beyond his control. Was it right for them not only to supply his needs, but to see that he had an abundance? He said, that's the case. He said, I'm amply supplied, having received from Epaphroditus what you have sent. And then he calls their offering a fragrant aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. So when an Israelite would take his best animal and go to offer it, the aroma, as it were, and the illustration would be something God would smell and be pleased. God doesn't have a nose like we have it. It was an indication of God's approval of that, that the heart of that man who offered it was doing it out of worship and devotion to God. Same is true with this contribution that was being made to the support of this gospel preacher. Now, I have here on the chart the ideal. The ideal would be that preachers are supported well enough when they're doing their work that they would be able to lay up funds for the future. That they could set aside a 401k, for example, or other means to supply for the future, that they could make investments. I, right now, am well supported by the church in Humble. In years past, in other places that I've been, I was not well supported. And so back then, I didn't have any money for extra investments. Maybe I still should have put aside $5 or $10 a week. Should have. My dad tried to get me to do that. But what I'm telling you is there are men that supported that barely have enough to support their families, because unfortunately some brethren think that a preacher just needs to get by on poverty wages just long enough that he can eat and that's it. That's changing in a lot of places and that's great. But be that as it may, the ideal would be that men who are worthy and working are provided with enough income not only to support their families currently, but to provide for themselves in days to come. The ideal is often not recognized. Or, and for other reasons, there are men who do not make a whole lot of income. I can give you some names of men right now that some of them we have had a share in supporting. One we're helping support right now, who has worked for minimal, I don't mean minimal in the sense they can't hardly get by, but nothing like the wages that we're used to in our area, because they wanted to stay in that area and preach the gospel. Well, that obviously limited their ability to provide for their older age and to have the funds that are available to so many people today when they retire to have a pension, a 401k, have money laid up so I don't have to worry. These fellows simply did not have the resources to do that kind of thing. In addition to the fact their wages may not have been very much, much of their income, or at least a part of their income, may have been spent in the expenses that they entailed in preaching the gospel. For example, traveling expenses. Brother Ayandari, who we support, spends part of his money in travel expenses, for example. And
Brother Acevedo, in his recent report or his letter to the elders about his support, talked about some of the expenses that he bears in his work. And so men do that. They may supply their office supplies and those kind of things out of their own pocket. So really the final question in our study here tonight is this. Not what has the church here done in the past, not what is the tradition of Churches of Christ, not, well, just leave it to the elders. That's not the answer. The question is, what does the Lord want us to do with His funds? I have Numbers 18:8 because that's where we read. He said, what the people have contributed to me, I have given to you. That was God's plan. Unfortunately, even back then, God's plan fell by the wayside. Sometimes the Levites weren't supported, and they did have to go out and work in the fields. And Nehemiah tried to correct that. But be that as it may, that was God's plan. That's what God wants implemented, and that is God's plan for today. So we're going to have, the Lord willing, a budget meeting a little bit later this year and talk with the congregation about the next year. I don't know what will be on the table at this particular point, but it may come to the point that we have a man or two that we're supporting who, because of circumstances, is not able to devote himself fully to his work as he has for the last 30 or 40 years. And it would be possible, I don't know, but it may be possible that the elders would suggest that we continue to support that particular individual. I don't know if we'll do that, but if we do, I simply want the congregation to be equipped to make a decision about that. It's your money, it's not the elders' money, and then you give it to the Lord for His work, as to whether or not that would be something that you would be comfortable having fellowship in. So if you have questions about the lesson I preached tonight, you be sure to ask me when I'm finished, or send me an email or text later, and I'll attempt to address that.